A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to all our listeners joining us from every corner of, from all the corners of the world. Now, thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM, the station where conversations count. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On The Radio News Analysis, your weekday deep dive into the issues shaping Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. Now, it's Friday, the 7th of November, 2025, and as we close off another week of headlines, debates, and developments, we take a moment to reflect, unpack, and make sense of the stories that continue to define our national journey. From the halls of parliament to the heartbeat of our communities, this is where Namibia's most pressing conversations find depth, context, and clarity. Now, right here on the Reading News Analysis, we don't just tell you what's happening, we explore why it's happening, how it affects you, and what it means for the future of our nation. Now, every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430, we move beyond the headlines through expert interviews, archived audio, sharp commentary, and of course, your voices. Because in a world where information moves fast, understanding must move deeper. Now today, as we wrap up the week, we'll revisit key developments, spotlight the voices shaping our national discourse, and bring you thoughtful analysis on the issues that matter most, all with the balance, credibility, and insight you've come to expect from On The Radar. And remember, you can catch On The Radar live across all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us on the Eagle FM app, or join in on the conversation on our WhatsApp channel for exclusive insights, highlights, and behind-the-scenes updates. So wherever you are tuning in from, your home, your office, or the road, stay with us. Stay thoughtful, stay curious, because here on The Radar, Namibia doesn't just listen. Namibia comes to think. Now let's jump straight into today's top stories. Now, as the festive season approaches, cybersecurity expert law enforcement agencies are warning the public to be extra cautious of online scams, fraud, and cyber attacks. Now, of course, during this time of the year, scammers often take advantage of increased online shopping, year-end bonuses, and the general festive excitement to trick unsuspecting individuals into sharing personal or financial information. Now, common scammers include fake online stores, fraudulent delivery messages, social media giveaways, and phishing emails pretending to be from banks or reputable retailers. Authorities note that Namibia has seen a steady rise in cyber-related crimes in recent years, with victims losing significant amounts of money to online fraudsters. Meanwhile, experts further encourage the use of strong passwords and two-factor authentication, which can prevent most account takeovers. Now, the public is reminded that cybersecurity is a shared responsibility. Staying alert, informed, and skeptical can help ensure a safe and scam-free festive season. Of course, we have reached out to Tanya Hopker, and Tanya Hopker is a cybersecurity awareness specialist. Let's take a listen to her. A very good afternoon to you, Tanya Hopker, and welcome to On The Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Now, Tanya, I think this is definitely the right time to talk about cybersecurity, law enforcement agencies, scams, fraud, cyber attacks, you know, online scams as well, as we are approaching the festive season. Yeah. So just exactly why is this a season riskier for cybercrime?
Holiday seasons are when we are busy. We're also excited to go on holiday. We're finishing up last-minute things at work. Mm-hmm. And this is when scammers know they can take advantage of distracting you with rush decisions. So 95% of attacks actually focus on the or have a human interaction. So a lot of attackers, they attack the human, they hack the human, not a IT system.
Yeah.
And so it's during that time that, you know, we're busy, we're not thinking, they call us, they put us under pressure, and we give away valuable information, or we do a payment without thinking.
Mm.
So they're really counting on this kind of busyness at the end of the year, you know?
Yeah. When we are very excited and I think very also generous at this point in time, we're not really double checking or whatnot.
We're tired and we're excited to go on holiday, but we still have work to finish up. So, and that's when they get you.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are the common scams that we should watch out for?
So in a business sense, so for business and personal, but in a business sense, it's a lot of scams coming through via phishing. So via phishing emails, which means that the hackers are sending emails with links to bad sites or to malware or ransomware or something like this,
mm-hmm.
Or links to sites where they ask you to enter sensitive information such as your login details. And this is very common with the businesses. And this is increasing in Namibia drastically. All businesses really need to watch out for this. And then on a kind of more community level or for the public, you know, we're seeing fake messages all over. So we're seeing online scams in terms of fake job ads, you know, fake delivery messages saying you missed a parcel, or, you know, the bank calling someone pretending to call from City of Windhoek with your account outstanding. It's all over.
Just how serious is it in Namibia? Just not so long ago, of course, we also read that a lady was defrauded of her pension money up to $1 million. But how serious is this in Namibia?
So it's serious, and it's becoming more and more serious every day. And it's something that we cannot afford to ignore anymore as the general public and also as businesses. So a TransUnion survey showed that 63% of the respondents, so the Namibian respondents, reported being targeted by email, online, or phone call or text message during the last 3 months of 2024. Okay. So they obviously did a survey, and 63% said they had some form of, you know, attack at them. And 11% of those said they had been victims. So these are high numbers. These are very high numbers. Mm-hmm. And when we look into the business space, we as a company, we do simulated phishing attacks where we pretend to be the hacker and test the employees to see if they can spot the phishing emails. So we send out those phishing emails, and easily 30% of people are falling for those phishing emails. So that business risk is incredibly high.
Mm. You speak about phishing emails. What is phishing, and how can companies fight or combat against it?
So phishing involves an email from someone pretending to be from a trusted source, and they try to trick the staff into sharing information or clicking on malicious links. And the cyber criminals often use social engineering. So again, the sense of urgency or a sense of putting them under pressure or excitement to manipulate the users. And
great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Or excitement to manipulate the users. And so we can think of emails coming in pretending to have a parcel post and you missed the delivery. Please click on the link to reschedule your delivery. And that link is then a malicious link. Or you can imagine another phishing email where you are told that your email account was logged in, you know, somewhere in Asia. Please, can you verify this login? Please verify your account. You get a fright. Exactly. They're putting you under some form of pressure. You get a fright. You say, okay, cool, I've got to verify it very quickly. You click on that link. You put in your account details, and that was actually the phishing email. So now they've got your account details. And the scary thing here as well is it doesn't just end there. And, you know, not every phishing email immediately results in an impact. What the hackers can do is then they have the login details to your inbox, and they can log into the inbox themselves. They can sit in that inbox, and they can wait, and they can see what information's coming in. Yeah. And then they can see, oh, what invoices need to be paid, you know? And say you receive a supplier invoice, please pay me $500,000 for whatever you've ordered. Mm-hmm. You can quickly take that email. They download it for themselves. They delete it from your mailbox. And then they will take that original invoice, that original email, and they will change the banking details. And they will tell you to transfer to their account, for example. And then what happens? You transfer the money, so you're out of the $500,000, and you still owe the $500,000. So for an SME, this is very, very dangerous. And, you know, 60% of SMEs that are attacked with a major hack go out of business within 6 months.
Mm. Interesting. Now, I think with phishing emails, I think we're a little bit I think we are quite gullible in that aspect, because we also receive phishing emails, you know, sometimes via your WhatsApp, just links and whatnot, also on Facebook. Perhaps how does one try to maybe find out, or just when do we know, how can you tell? What are those basic things that you can tell that this could be a phishing email?
Yeah, so there's quite a few red flags, and depending on the mode through which it's delivered, you can obviously verify in different ways. One of the most common one is look out for the social engineering. So look out for someone pretending to be from a trusted company. So I'm pretending to call from Bank X, or I'm pretending to call from City of Windhoek, or they introduce themselves. They say, hi, I'm calling you from City of Windhoek. Immediately you trust them, okay?
Yeah.
And then what they do is they continue with the social engineering, and they will create a sense of urgency. For example, there's an outstanding balance on your City of Windhoek account. Please, you have to pay it today, otherwise we're going to cut you off. There's the urgency. And then they will, make you scared. They're going to cut it off.
Yeah.
And that's, that's their emotion. And then what you would do, you would stop and you would say, thank you very much for the information. I hear you. I'm not going to give you any information. I'm not going to give you any money. I'm going to hang up the phone now. I'm going to not reply to this SMS, not reply to this email, not reply to this WhatsApp. I'm going to go and find the official number of City of Windhoek, or the official number of your bank, or the official number of whoever.
Mm.
And then I'm going to contact them directly and verify, is this true?
Mm-hmm. In other words, you have to be really bold and cautious at the same time.
Yes, and very vigilant.
Mm.
And again, coming back to the Christmas season, this is when we're taking the phone call at the same time as we're rushing to buy presents or going down to the coast, and then we don't think.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Now, why should a small business enterprise care about cybersecurity?
Yeah, so small businesses, what we see is that small businesses think, so much going on, and there's all of these large businesses. Why would the hackers care about me? They're going to go after the big businesses with the big money. But that's actually completely the opposite of what's true. So 85% of cyber attacks target SMEs. So that's the majority. And they do this, and they're successful with this, because they know that most SMEs don't have a dedicated IT team. And they most likely do not have some form of cybersecurity, policies and procedures and protection in place. And so they know this. And so they know.
So SMEs are actually quite interesting, because it's very often thought that because they're small businesses, they are not targeted. While in fact, it's the opposite. And about 85% of attacks actually target SMEs. So that's the big majority.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned before, about 60% of SMEs go out of business within 6 months if they suffer a big attack. So the risk for them is very high. And the reason that they are such a hot target for hackers is because hackers know that they are still profitable, well-run companies. They're making some money. However, they very often don't have a dedicated IT team or a cybersecurity function, which means that they're weak targets. And so they're easy targets. And then in addition to that, what we find is attacks are becoming more and more automated.
Mm-hmm.
So while in the past it cost more time and money to do an attack, and then they maybe would choose their target more efficiently, now they're just willing to throw out attacks left, right, and center to anyone and see where it sticks, because it's so easy to carry out those attacks.
Mm. Okay. Now, we already have antivirus and firewall. Isn't that enough?
Yeah, so an antivirus and firewalls, they only stop known antivirus programs and firewalls only stop known malware and block unauthorized network access. So there are a lot more attacks that are coming through all over. And as I mentioned, 95% of attacks include a human interaction. So those firewalls and antiviruses can't protect against human behavior. So they can't protect against a phishing email we might click on. They can't protect against us setting a bad password, which is reused all over and mm-hmm. then, you know, leaked on the dark web, and they can log in using that. You know, there's a lot of things that antiviruses and firewalls do not protect about enough about. And then in addition to that, you know, once they're just protecting at the front, but you also need further cybersecurity measures. Mm-hmm. So, for example, someone is now inside. How are you going to pick that up that they're inside? You know, they don't often immediately shut down your systems. They sometimes wait to see how can I best attack this company.
Yeah.
So you need to be able to detect them. Then you need to be able to get rid of them. So there's a lot more than just an antivirus and a firewall.
Hmm, I see. What are some of those quick wins that businesses can implement today?
Businesses can focus on, you know, there's a lot they need to do, but start with strong passwords, start with strong password policies. In Namibia, we are very guilty of using the same passwords. We are very guilty of writing those passwords down. Internationally, the best practice is to have a password manager. It is not viable to remember many, many passwords and keep those passwords long and, you know, strong and not reuse them if you're not using a password manager, right? So really look into that. Then in addition, make sure that you're keeping all your software updated. So those software companies are releasing updates that have security patches in them. So if you're not updating immediately, you're getting the latest security update.
Okay. And how often should companies perhaps train their staff to keep them equipped and, of course, in on the loop on what's happening?
Yeah, so staff training should be ongoing. It's not just about actually training your staff. It's also about creating the vigilance. So you need to train your staff on how to spot phishing emails very seriously, how to set good passwords, how to respond when people come into the office. There's a broad range of topics that staff need to be trained on. And then in addition to that, it needs to be ongoing. And what you really need to have is practical training included. So your staff should be receiving simulated phishing emails to see how they will respond. It's not good enough to just tell them about phishing emails. You need to see how they react when they get a phishing email.
Okay. Tanya Hofka, thank you so much for educating us on this. And I sure hope that it will fall on good ears and we'll at least be vigilant. Yeah.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
Okay, Tanya. Thank you so much.
Okay. Okay. Is that okay?
Okay, and of course, we are back. We are still continuing to talk about cyber security scams, cyber alert, and of course, just being alert at this time as we are heading into the festive season. Now we're joined in studio telephonically by Stephen Kasuba. Stephen is an ICT specialist, owner and founder of Kasuba Technologies. Stephen, a very good afternoon to you and welcome to On The Real News Analysis.
Good afternoon. Happy Juju. Thank you for having me. Good afternoon, listeners.
Yeah, pleasure is all
so
mine.
I'm so excited.
Now, Stephen, of course, we're talking about common scams and fake online stores, fraudulent delivery messages, social media giveaways, phishing emails. Just why is it, I think, necessary for us to have such a conversation, especially now that we're heading into the festive season?
Yeah, very good question. Such kind of topics are very important, especially to the end users. When I say end users, I mean like, you know, personnel that do not really know deep about cybersecurity and IT stuff. So it's very much important for you to just have a certain level of awareness so that you don't fall victim into scams and, you know, cyber bullying and all these cyber criminal activities that are taking place.
Yeah.
So basically, currently now we're going into the festive season, and I know that everybody's excited. It's holiday time. You can't wait to go into the holidays, and then, you know, people are going to get their bonuses, and people don't really look out for those issues. Yeah, so basically, there are just a few things that you need to actually look out for. Did I answer the question first?
Yeah, go, you know, you're fine. Go ahead.
Can I go on?
Go on.
Okay, great. Yeah, so, you know, when we talk about cyber is a space. It's an IT space where things technologically happen, okay? And just like in a day-to-day community, like the way we have thieves or churches, what you call them, we also have cyber criminals. And their job on a day-to-day basis is just to be online and scamming people, you understand? Yeah, for example, things like people will be advertising cars, they will be advertising things that they don't actually have in their possession, and then they'll scam you off your money, okay? So these are certain things that we just have to look out for. For example, like if you get an email, okay, somebody sends you an email and then says you won, maybe you won an iPhone 14 Pro Max and all of those kind of things. I mean, you didn't play any game, you didn't attend to any kind of raffle. Why would you win a phone?
You know, sometimes you know what? I think sometimes we need to be also really logical. I know it, in that moment, perhaps it gets overwhelming and it gets very, I don't know, I honestly, but I think it's a point really where you ask yourself, like, that which you're asking, you didn't play any sort of game. So what is it that you want? Yeah. And sometimes, so
exactly.
It's, and I think sometimes it's really to reach out to somebody that you know perhaps is into IT, cybersecurity, or any person whatsoever, you know, just a friend to say, you know what, I think this, because then sometimes also they will help you.
Yeah. And you know how these guys do it? There's what we call keyloggers. So a keylogger is a software that once you click on the link on your phone or on the laptop, the keylogger, basically, when you are entering your, let's say, a password, PIN code for your bank account, the other person on the other side will be taking note of your password, and that is why also it's not very safe to do transactions, like bank transactions on the phone. Don't keep the passwords on your phone, like, you know, on the Google Chrome where you save your passwords. Never do that, because if anybody gets hold of your phone, then that's it. Yeah, so basically, for example, let's say there's what we call phishing, email phishing. I can pretend like I'm happy juju from Eagle FM, and I'll send an email to somebody to appear as you. So just, you know, double check. You can check in the URL. Make sure that the domain, it registers, like, where the email is coming from.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can get an email, it's coming from 77767@gmail.com. You know for sure that Eagle FM will not send me an email like this from this kind of domain. If it's really happy juju, it has to have the domain for Eagle FM, like eaglefm.com, such kind of things. And when you're scrolling Facebook or social media, just be very careful. Don't just click anything that you see. Just analyze and just be very careful whenever something pops up or anything. And, Happy, have you ever noticed, like, let's say, on your emails, let's say your interest is shoes. You love shoes, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And you like to scroll shoes. Like when you're scrolling, you're browsing on the internet, and then you like to, your interest is shoes. Have you ever noticed that the emails that you'll be coming in your spam will be based around what you like to
about your browse. Interests.
About your interests. Now, how does it get to that point? How do they know? Are they prophets? How do the other companies know? You get my point? Yeah. So as long as we are in the cyberspace, as long as we are on the internet, nobody's safe out there. And we just need to take precautions. We just need to be very careful out there. And especially during this time of the year, it's festive season. Yeah. When you're standing at the ATM, make sure nobody's standing behind you. I mean, like somebody calls you on the phone to say, you know, we're trying to correct your account. We're going to send you an OTP. Please read that OTP to me. I mean, it's suspicious. Call your banker directly to say,
true,
I just want to confirm this and that. Just, we just have to be a bit more careful.
A bit more vigilant.
Yeah, we have to be vigilant.
Stephen, do you think that companies are doing enough in terms of cybersecurity awareness? Are we really perhaps doing enough, or is it something that when it happens, then we run around trying to mitigate the situation? But do you think we're really putting in the efforts to try and combat those things, you know, prevent it while it's still early?
Yes. Most companies spend a lot of money in security. They are actually trying their best. But you know what? The problem mostly comes from, there's a word we use, PEPCAC. So PEPCAC, the acronym stands for problem exists between keyboard and chair. So most of the times, that is why we emphasize on alerting the end user. Like I said in the beginning, the end users are the people that just use the computers, but they're not experts. So mostly, in most cases, the problems are caused by the end users because they're not aware about the risk of just doing things anyhow when you're using devices, when you're using computers, phones. So problem usually exists between chair and keyboard. You find like a user clicked on something without them knowing, and then they installed a malware on their computer. Mm-hmm. And then that malware now, you know, fries up their computer, and all their passwords for their bank accounts and all those things is now, you know, vulnerable. Like they're compromised. So usually, yeah, it is really triggered by the end users. That is why we need to just put more emphasis, just to emphasize a lot more, give this kind of awareness to end users that the risk that you face over being cyber ignorant is too costly. It can really, somebody can is capable of wiping your whole account in a jiffy.
It's too costly. Mm-hmm.
It's too costly. Yes. So, yeah, the companies, to answer your question, companies are really putting in a lot of money. They're investing a lot in cybersecurity. Yeah, it's just that the users just have to be more aware and also practice what we talk about when we have this kind of training and all those things. Yeah.
Stephen, should companies also just focus on training IT specialists or IT guys, or should they train just generally everyone? I mean, you speak about the end user and whatnot. For instance, I don't deal with IT related work, but I work on the computer in a company that I could click on something that could potentially, you know, put a company in a jeopardized position, something that I didn't even do intentionally. Do you think perhaps maybe there's need for companies to educate all their employees, especially when we're dealing with computers and online related stuff?
Okay, great question. Thanks for that. Yeah, no, when it comes to IT professionals like myself, with IT, we are constantly trained because technology changes every now and then. So you have to keep to the trends. You have to be updated. That's why we do certifications most of the time. Now, when it comes to the end users, it's not really vital for them to undergo intensive training. It's just this basic awareness, because in companies and enterprises, we have good security technologies that we have. For example, let's say there's a firewall in an enterprise. Okay, so firewall is a security device or software that filters, like protects the network, your local area network, and the outside world. So happy, like, if you are visiting certain sites and there's a firewall implemented in the company, trust me, as an IT person, I'll check everything that you're doing. So, and as a piece of advice, don't ever connect to the company internet because you're being monitored. So on that one, we in bigger enterprises, like, you know, the banks and other big corporations, us as IT people, we've got security mechanisms. We can monitor you, what you are doing on your computer. Only if you yeah. leave your work, you go somewhere, we can check what you are scrolling. You're on Facebook, you are visiting certain sites, and if the site is risky, we can just we'll just block you from accessing that site for protection.
Yeah.
So basically, like for bigger companies, they are, I think we're okay, because as long as they've got a strong IT team, there's security, cyber security in place. Yeah, but this kind of awareness is just for the end users individually. You understand, whether they're at a company, they're at work or not, especially when they're just doing their own things, they're on their phones, they're working on a laptop and they're using the home Wi-Fi, it is vital that they must know these basics. Yeah, but for corporations and other things, we are covered because we monitor everything that is going on the network.
Interesting.
That is our job.
Yeah. What about, now that you say that, what about connecting to Wi-Fi in the mall, for instance? Is that something that is safe? Can I perhaps, let me say, for instance, it's holiday season and I'm traveling abroad and I'm now connected to Wi-Fi at the airport or in the mall. Is that something that is safe for me to do, especially if I'm going to access my bank account?
No. That's not a safe practice to do. Like, especially these free Wi-Fis. You know, there's what we call eavesdropping. If I'm on the same network as you, I can easily log in into your device and I'll be able to check what you're doing and I'll get your password. So if you're at the airport or you're at the mall, don't do big transactions like transferring money through the bank using free Wi-Fi. It is very, very risky and it's costly. Yeah. Hello?
Steven?
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm here. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
I'll say,
because that Wi-Fi, if it's free, then that means there's no some level of encryption. You're not protected. So you cannot really do confidential things that require security on a public open Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Yeah, Stephen. Interesting. Now, overall, Stephen, I don't know, perhaps those tips, in a way, of a summary of our conversation, those tips that we should be on the lookout for so that we can be very vigilant. I mean, we're hearing, and while we're actually at that, before we get to that, Stephen, you know, just recently, not so long ago, we had of a pensioner who was defrauded of her money, about $1 million. Now it's got so far to a point of people coming into one's houses and pretending to be from the bank or from the police or from the what. In such an incident, Stephen, as an IT specialist, just what do you think then are some of the precautions that a person can make? And is there no way, perhaps, whereby the bank can be, certain measures be put in place to say a certain amount, you know, when a certain amount is being deducted, especially, I don't know, can it not give us an alert to say, no, this should be something fishy?
Yes. There are mechanisms in place that have been implemented. In some banks, actually, they're currently implementing those protocols. Like, for example, transferring money from a phone should be prohibited completely for a certain amount. Like, let's say if you want to transfer like 50,000 from a phone, I think that should be prohibited, and also there should be like some level of confirmation with the banker. Somebody from the bank has to approve also your transaction, you know, just for authentication, just to make sure that the person who's making the transfer is actually the original person that is doing that on that part. Yeah, but just to the listeners and the end users, when these kind of things happen to you, because I mean anybody can fall victim of these scam alerts and cyberbullying. Just taking a deep breath.
Yeah.
Think and read. You know, IT is all about just reading what is in front of you. You can literally, the computer or the phone, whatever technology, can literally just prompt you to do something, to say, to do this, click this. if you can just take a minute, you take in a deep breath, you take a minute just to read what is in front of you, and then understand what is whatever the pop-up is saying, you avoid a lot of issues, because once you read, the computer is prompting you to say, okay, next, you go to this and this and that, and then you'll be like, oh, you're asking me to click this link for what? Yeah, so basically, it's just about reading what is in front of you, especially like, because, you know, technology, computers, these are programmable devices. It's a software. There will always be prompts in front of you. So just be careful. Just calm down. Take your time. Don't just click what you don't understand. Read what is in front of you, and it will save you a lot of issues later.
Yeah.
Stephen,
I really sincerely appreciate your time with us right here on the Real News Analysis. Perhaps maybe if there's something that I did leave out, let me just give you this opportunity to say your last word.
Okay, no, basically, no, thank you so much for having me. And I'm so glad that I could be of help. I think moving forward, companies should actually look at, you know, investing more, especially on the end user part, just to be giving them this kind of awareness training, especially when it comes to, you know, cybersecurity. I think it will, quarterly, maybe after 3 months. But it's where end users, they really, really need this, and then we can avoid all of this scamming and all of this cyberbullying that is going around.
Stephen Kasumba, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.
And with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, this is on the Reader News Analysis. We'll be back shortly with more. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipurane ngeno wapungwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado ili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendife nawa lokumona oijago ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. The Namibia Statistics Agency has announced the successful completion of data collection for the 2025 Namibia Financial Inclusion Survey. Now, the nationwide exercise, which began on the 6th of October 2025, officially concluded on 4th November 2025. Now, the Namibia Financial Inclusion Survey was conducted among 1,960 households across all 14 regions of the country, supported by 198 field staff members. Now, the survey aimed to gather crucial data on how individuals and households in Namibia access, use, and understand various financial services such as banking, insurance, and savings. According to the NSA, the collected data will now undergo processing and analysis to produce comprehensive insights into the state of financial inclusion in Namibia. The findings are expected to assist the government and other key stakeholders in formulating and improving policies and programs that promote inclusive access to financial services for all Namibians. Now, the agency anticipates releasing the official Namibia Financial Inclusion Survey results by the end of March 2026. While the Namibia Financial Inclusion Survey data collection has concluded, the Namibia Statistics Agency emphasized that field operations for the Namibia Household Income and Expenditure Survey are still ongoing. The Namibia Household Income and Expenditure Survey, which began on the 28th of April 2025, investigates household income, spending patterns, and living conditions, and will continue until the 22nd of April 2026. Now, some households that took part in the Namibia Financial Inclusive Survey may also be selected for the Namibia Household Income and Expenditure Survey. The Namibia Statistics Agency expressed gratitude to participating households, individuals, and law enforcement agencies for their cooperation during the Namibia Financial Inclusion Survey data collection. Now, the agency also encouraged continued public support and participation in the ongoing Namibia Household Income and Expenditure Survey in order to ensure the success of national statistical exercise.
The Namibia Statistics Agency would like to thank everyone who participated in its financial inclusion survey during the collection period from the 6th of October till the 4th of November, including those who supported the pilot phase. Your cooperation with our interviewers is helping to improve lives and guide important financial decisions for the country. The NSA sends hundreds of staff across all regions to collect data on how people access and use financial services. This information is crucial for planning and improving services for all Namibians. We would also like to remind the entire Namibian nation that our household income and expenditure survey is still ongoing and will continue until the 22nd of April next year. Thank you for your continued support and participation.
With that being said, we pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we'll be telling you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngino wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utete opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu honda doi inawa. Nune uto otukupitira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi finawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back in now for economic indicators. Now, $1 today is equal to 17 Namibian dollars and 41 cents. £1 sterling is equal to 22 Namibian dollars and 84 cents. €1 is equal to 20 Namibian dollars, 0.02 cents. And one Swiss franc is equal to 21 Namibian dollars and 60 cents. One Australian dollar is equal to 11 Namibian dollars and 28 cents. And one Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 30 cents. Let's pause here now. We'll be back shortly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere uliko ni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota enjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back for News Beyond the Borders. We're starting off in South Africa, where Joburg EMS are on high alert following Thursday's torrential hailstorm.
Johannesburg's emergency medical services is on high alert following the torrential hailstorm that struck the city yesterday, with warnings of more of the same to come. We're now joined on the line by EMS spokesperson Robert Muradzi for an update. Robert, some of the footage coming out yesterday from that those thunderstorms, but particularly here in Gauteng, were absolutely devastating. Any news from overnight? Perhaps you can update us on what actually were the consequences of those heavy downpours.
Good morning, Leanne, and morning to the viewers. Yeah, so far we have not yet recorded any major incidents which were reported overnight and also this morning. We're having our monitoring teams, most especially in our low-lying areas, which will be our informal settlements, since we know that when we have severe thunderstorms like the ones we're having now, our residents in our settlements will be the hardest hit. So we're happy to report that so far we have not yet recorded any major incidents. However, in most of our river streams, which is Klip Valley, which is the stream which is cutting across around Soweto and surrounding areas, and also Jackskei, we have seen that the water levels are much more higher. So we have got our monitoring teams in those areas monitoring to ensure that if we have to move residents in those areas, we can be able to alert them to do so. But so far, so good. We are still pleading with our residents in those areas to avoid crossing river streams as and when they're conducting their daily activities, because normally when they conduct their daily activities, they normally cross river streams, which might be a risk for them. They might be swept away while they're trying to cross those areas. So, and also our motorists to continue to, exercise caution, try and avoid crossing maybe roads or low-lying bridges which might be flooding.
So, Robert, obviously for today, unfortunately, there has been another warning from the South African Weather Service, a level 2 for thunderstorms, hail, damaging winds, heavy downpours. This is something that obviously is right there on your scope. And well, actually, that warning was last night. I'm not sure if it's the same for today. We'll get an update from Joel now. Perhaps you know. But I imagine emergency services on standby for any eventualities.
Yes, we got another warning for this morning,
okay,
which is for Friday. And we are told we're still going to receive a lot of rainfall, which might come with some small hail damage and also strong winds, of which it might still cause flash floods. So we've activated our disaster management center. We've got our monitoring teams in all seven regions of the city, and also our a specialized team, which is our aquatic rescue unit, which is a specialized team which responds to water-related emergencies. It's also on high alert. So from our side, we should be able to respond to all, you know, water-related emergencies which might be reported in the city of Johannesburg. So we're encouraging our residents to call our emergency management services command and control center, which is 011-375-5911 for any life-threatening emergencies.
Robert, always a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for the update. Heed that call. Another warning has been issued for Gauteng and the city of Johannesburg. Emergency services management certainly on high alert, as Robert Molozi has just explained to us.
Meanwhile, Police Minister Zinzo Mchunu hands over electronic devices for investigation.
The Madlanga Commission is continuing to hear testimonies from witnesses regarding the allegations made by General Ndlandla Mkhwanazi. EMPD Chief of Police Jabulani Mapiyeye is today continuing with his testimony. For more on the story now, we take you to SABC News anchor Ayanda Nyati and reporter Kenny Mapanga, who are at the Justice Bridget Mabandla Justice College in Pretoria for us this hour. So, Ayanda, yesterday we heard lots to come out of the commission, and we heard how the
afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Allegedly flouted processes. Let's hear more.
Absolutely, Nkolisi. It all feels like it's coming to a head, isn't it? Welcome back to the Bridget Mabanda Justice College. We'll jump straight into our distilling of the information we have so far with our senior reporter, Kenny Mapanga, who's also here. The inquiry is going to start in just about 10 minutes' time, but we have to begin by just reflecting on what we heard about the suspended minister, Zinzo Mchunu's devices now supposedly being in the hands of law enforcement authorities. What else do we know about that?
Indeed. So we now know there's confirmation that the police minister who has been placed on a leave of absence, that is Zinzo Mchunu, has officially handed over his electronic devices, and he's done so voluntarily. We know that it's at least 5 electronic devices that were taken. That is the state-issued laptop that he has, as well as a personal tablet, or we could call it an iPad, if you could put it that way. And there's 2 unused old cell phones that they also took that were found in his possession, as well as his 1 active phone that he currently uses that he handed over to the authorities in that ongoing probe. That rounds up the picture of the number of people or people of interest that have been, I guess, raided and their devices have been taken. That includes the October raid of Lieutenant General Shadrack Sibiya, where we know devices were taken, the raid of the home of the Chief of Staff, Cedric Ngambide, and we know he wasn't at the home, but some devices were taken from that particular home. Brian Mokhotse as well, there was a raid at his business premises, but we know that he wasn't there at the time. But but we have gotten confirmation that he has since handed over his electronic devices. So that rounds up a number of the persons of interest in these allegations and the ongoing probes that is taking place surrounding the overall allegations of criminality, political interference and corruption and the criminal justice system. So that's just part of the course. But with the police minister, the difficulty when they started those raids is that they couldn't get into the residence of the estate of the police minister. And now we're hearing a few weeks later that he has now voluntarily given over his devices to authorities.
And some of these individuals, Kenny, had raised suspicions about the timing of all of this.
Indeed. When we attended the briefing of Cedric Gabinde, which we thought were going to be about the allegations that were being made about him in Parliament, but in fact it was to sound the alarm on the police that had visited his home and found his brother there and not him. And the allegation was that that this was about the investigations, yes, but the fact that the allegation that they were trying to make is that they may not have had evidence and they're only now gathering it now by getting their electronic devices. So that the allegation was that the allegations that Nkonazi made on the 6th of July were made without proof, and now they are seeking that confirmation through all these raids. We haven't heard Nkonazi respond to this yet, but we know General Masemola was that the raids were standard as part of the ongoing investigations into these probes.
And some people might be wondering why this is of interest to us here at the Bridget Mabandla Justice College, where the Madlanga Commission is sitting. But of course, all these things are connected.
All of these issues are connected with respect to the allegations of criminality, political interference, and corruption in the criminal justice system. We have this probe that was commissioned by the president, and of course will come up with a report, but there's also work that needs to be done in the criminal justice system as far as the SAPs to do their investigation so that some of these issues can be taken forward. So the raids that you are seeing are undertaken by the police themselves, and the process here is a transparent process in which you can learn the facts surrounding these allegations of criminality, political interference and corruption in the criminal justice system. Of course, all of these names that we have mentioned have not yet had a chance to appear before the commission because they'll appear during phase two, which is the implicated persons. They'll get an opportunity to come and give their version of events. We're currently in phase one, but we know the bulk of the allegations against them. So it comes as no surprise as a number of them are experiencing raids and devices are being taken as ongoing probes continue about these allegations that center these alleged criminal cartels and their alleged infiltration into the criminal justice system.
Absolutely. And there are a number of processes that are unfolding. You and I have been at pains to explain that what's happening in Parliament is different but twin to what we're seeing taking place here. I just want to take a moment, perhaps, to take us back to part of what was said in Parliament yesterday insofar as the state capture-related cases are concerned. We heard the news of Angelo Grizzi, former Bosasa boss, reaching some kind of settlement with the state insofar as his corruption case is concerned. Andrea Johnson, who heads IDAC, that's the Investigating Directorate Against Corruption, was asked about essentially why they ultimately reached that agreement. She essentially explained that a lot was at stake given Angela Grizzi's health status and what they were able to get from him under those circumstances. Take a listen.
In terms of what we can prove, Honourable Breitenbach, we could only prove the gratifications to him of 2.7 million rands. There is no other evidence. He pleaded guilty to 3 counts of corruption, 1 count of money laundering, a total of 40 years imprisonment, as well as paying back that which he was gratified to the asset forfeiture unit. In return, he gives us something we did not have, which is an answer I gave to the Honourable Malema. There was evidence we did not have. If we didn't get his 204s, I can tell you unequivocally so. It may not be a popular answer, but we would not be able to move on some of those matters that the Honourable Malema mentioned. It is unfortunate, but sometimes this is what you do for the greater good, or else some will walk and the perception that some are more equal than others would just have become real.
So there you have it, Andrea Johnson speaking in Parliament yesterday, essentially saying we had to get what we could get
under these circumstances. This is important, of course, in the wake of yet another state capture-related cases making headlines, with Malusi Gigaba waiting, of course, for his case to get back on the roll. But to bring it back to the Bridget Mabanda Justice College, once again, we're expecting Isaac Mapieye, the EMPD police chief, to be back in the witness stand. And Kenny, let's speak to you again. He's seated behind you. If you had eyes behind your head, you'd be able to see him. What are we likely to hear from him today?
Well, we expected him to round up on these allegations of criminality within the Ekurhuleni Metro Police Department and the extent to which these alleged criminal cartels, particularly, namely, alleged cartel member, that is Vusimuzi Kat Matlala, and his private security company benefited from these alleged irregularities. So we've heard about the agreement that wasn't lawful, according to Mapieye, with respect to crime combating operations that Nkwanazi allegedly spearheaded in the Ekurhuleni Metro Police Department. We've heard about how his authority was completely disregarded by Nkwanazi and with the support of HODs in the department. And I'm sure we'll hear more evidence relating this alleged criminality and the extent to which the rot took place within the Metro Police Department, and as well against the backdrop of the fact that this particular unit actually doesn't have the powers to perform those crime combating operations and investigations as Mkhwanazi allegedly intended to do with the private security company of CAT. So the question is, to what end was this improper relationship being formed about? And I think that he's going to elaborate further on some of those details at 9:30 a.m. this morning.
Yeah, and we expected, I beg your pardon, what we'd also heard is just how difficult it was for him to move insofar as any disciplinary action is concerned, given the fact that Mkhwanazi, it seems, wasn't working alone.
Indeed, he had the support, clearly, allegedly, of the HOD of Legal, HOD of Human Resources, and you know you need those critical departments in order to spearhead those disciplinary processes. So you have a chief of police whose deputy seemingly created a parallel structure that was beyond his powers as the chief of police, so he couldn't intervene in some of the processes that they had started. And what you saw is now a situation where there's a parallel structure where decisions are being taken that should have been taken by the police chief. However, they were now being attributed to this deputy who had now gone far beyond his scope. And the question is why and to what benefit?
Absolutely. Common names coming up, Vusimuzi Kat Matlala being back in the mix. Kenny Mapanga, for now, thanks very much indeed.
And of course, since it's Friday, let's now call up our lucky winner for today's voucher. Like I do always tell you, make sure that you are by your phone this time around. A very good afternoon to you. I am calling you from Eagle FM. And you are live on air. Hello.
Yes, hello, ma'am.
How are you, sir?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. This is Happy calling you from Eagle FM.
Okay.
Yes. You're live on air now. Who am I speaking to?
You're speaking to Mr. Erastus.
Okay. Mr. Erastus, you're speaking to Happy from Eagle FM, and I am calling to inform you that you are this Friday's lucky winner of the 500 ShopRite YouSave gift voucher.
I've been waiting for this day.
You have.
Honestly, I've been waiting for this day.
You have been exercising
and I knew that I'll be
a lucky winner
one day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I like people that walk by faith, you know, to say, I will one day be the lucky winner. That's really nice. Well, this day has come to pass now.
No, all right.
Congratulations.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. My team will get in touch with you to let you know how you can pick up your gift voucher.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
Congratulations again.
No.
Okay. And of course, let's get back into our news. Moving on to Zambia, where President Hakainde Hichilema has urged farmers to invest in solar farms.
From across the provinces, farmers, agribusiness leaders, policymakers, and development partners gathered to deliberate on the future of the agriculture sector. This was during the ZNFU 119th Annual Congress, and the focus here was how to make agriculture resilient and productive amid the changing climate. President Hichilema officiated at the Congress, where he emphasized the government's vision for an agriculture-driven economy anchored on resilience, climate adaption, and sustainable value chains.
Some of us now, let me directly, some of us farmers who are capable of investing in energy also, even on our own farms, let us do it, because these reforms allow us to do it. This is part of diversification of farming income. You should do it if you have excess resources. Because I'm doing irrigation also now, I've taken a decision that I will put 5 megawatts on my property. I've started already. I'm encouraging others so that we don't always cry. This is part of this is part of resilience building. We're not waiting for the grid. So, but I need only 600 kilowatts, maximum 800 kilowatts at this stage. But because of reforms, I can put on the grid, right, a good 4 megawatts. And it will help someone. Let's do that. Let's not always think of investing, because we are farmers, on just tilling the soil. We can also add diversification on our farms, on our properties.
President Hichilema also talked strongly on issues surrounding livestock theft.
We are going to remove bail even for first offenders in the livestock sector. And when I say livestock, I mean even chickens. Yes. You don't go and take Mr. Mwere's fish from the fish cages and say, no, this is just fish. That's livestock. Mr. Mwere, too many thefts in the cages there. And the police cannot superintend over that. But if we remove the bell, and now cabinet is convinced, I said, you see what I told you? Even if you make it just 7 years, but no bell. And then, good news also, we are taking livestock, agriculture, assets into economic crimes. Now it's just an ordinary crime. We are gravitating these to economic crimes. They will be tried under the Economic and Financial Crimes Court. This process, here's the real value, takes only 5 months to prosecute.
And ZNFU has highlighted some of the challenges in the agriculture sector that need to be urgently addressed.
We humbly ask you, Mr. President, that you promised the farmer that in September we give them some irrigation fund. So we are waiting eagerly. The union, Mr. President, went around the country. We developed how we are going to manage those funds. And the farmers are happy and they're just waiting to say, can we have a move?
And Agriculture Minister Ruben Mutolo assured the farmers of payment as government has secured funds.
We have been paying the farmers, but maybe not to the extent the community would have loved. So we have paid more than 2-3 billion to the farmers. We are going to release this week more than 3 billion. There is 2 billion which is coming out of ZANACO. There is another 1 billion which has been organized from one of the banks. It is going to come out and we'll continue providing.
Players in the sector also shared their concerns that are hindering progress in the sector.
We requested the Minister of Agriculture and Finance to increase the numbers of agritechs, extension staff in the field, and also revamp these farmer training centers. Only then can we have increased productivity.
The president also awarded farmers from various provinces for their contribution to the sector. Ruth Chainda, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Meanwhile, South Africa warns of growing global inequality.
Imagine not knowing where your next meal will come from, how you'll pay school fees, or reach a doctor in an emergency. That's the reality for millions, and it's why South Africa, as G20 chair, commissioned the first global review of inequality.
People across the world know how extreme inequality undermines their dignity and chance for a better future. They also saw the brutal unfairness of apartheid or vaccine apartheid. Where millions in the global south were denied the vaccines to save them.
The report was led by Nobel laureate economist Joseph Stiglitz and experts from six countries. It shows that while wealth at the top has surged, progress for the poorest has barely shifted.
The pattern is what we've been seeing. It's just getting worse. The pandemic illustrated that for so many people, while so many people, the frontline workers, were having difficulty surviving. The stock market values went up, and those at the top did very, very well.
Researchers warn inequality isn't only about hardship. It also undermines states' ability to respond in crisis. And nowhere is that pressure felt more than South Africa, ranked the most unequal country in the world.
When a pandemic like COVID-19 hits us, our ability to respond is very constrained. And then we have this unequal access to healthcare, which we hope will be resolved by the proposed National Health Insurance, the NHI, that the government has signed on as a bill, but which is yet to come into effect.
The report calls for stronger social protection, fairer taxation, and sustained international cooperation. It also proposes an independent global panel to continue the work as South Africa hands the G20 presidency to the United States.
By creating this panel, this international panel on inequality, that there can be a permanent legacy, no matter how the vagaries of politics go in one country or another. The lesson of China is that economic policies do matter. That if you direct your economic policies in a way that address poverty, you can eliminate poverty, but you can't rest there.
Inequality has been at the heart of South Africa's G20 presidency, but this report puts into black and white the stark challenge of closing the gap between rich and poor. President Cyril Ramaphosa says it's now up to G20 leaders to act and turn words into change for millions around the world. Julie Shara, CGTN, Cape Town.
African Union says Tanzania's election failed to meet minimum democratic norms.
Comments since being sworn in, President Samia Suluhu Hassan vowed to unite the country and urged security agencies to ensure that normalcy returns. She blamed foreigners for last week's deadly protests.
Kipindi cha campaign.
During the campaign period, as a nation, we were divided along ideologies and fan bases. But after the elections, whoever wins is the one that was voted for by the majority. They are the nation's choice and should serve all, from those who voted for them and those who voted for the opposition to the ones who abstained the vote altogether. Those of us who have been voted into office pledge to you, our fellow citizens, that we shall use all our strength, all our ability, and all our knowledge in service of this nation.
We're now joined by Javan Naidu, a political economist at the Oxford Economics Africa in Cape Town, South Africa. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, the African Union's observer mission says Tanzania's election did not comply with democratic standards. What do you make of the statement and why now?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's quite an interesting one because we've seen over the years SADC has lacked. It's been more barking than biting. Sense of it all, if you call it that. But I think it has to do with, SADC's been a bit under pressure of late, considering what previous elections have been across the continent, where European or Western observers and human rights organizations have said, you know what, these elections are not free and fair in certain countries. So I think they've been under pressure to do something. And the fact in Tanzania that it was quite blatant, you know, as you mentioned, there's been some challenges around that. But the fact that the internet was shut down and that when the foreign minister was questioned on the Saturday, last week Saturday after the elections, he couldn't give quite a coherent answer as to why the internet was shut down. It was a very vague response. So I think that has sort of precipitated what SADC has said. They're quite concerned, given that Tanzania is quite a peaceful country, or at least historically.
Do we know the key aspects of the electoral process that the observers focused on?
Yes, so as you mentioned, one of the key processes is sort of pre-voting. So before the voting occurs, the election observers need to go into voting stations, they need to observe if there's enough materials. So a lot of them, there were issues of being denied. Some weren't given their letters, they weren't allowed to get near some of the polls. Some, there were even some SADC observers were arrested, and they were asked to actually delete photos they had taken of the polling stations by security officials. So that was the one major concern. The other one that SADC cited within the broader political environment of Tanzania was that it was mainly CCM observers were in there as party observers, which is quite concerning, obviously, given the main opposition were barred, but the smaller parties just don't have the capacity to have to provide that oversight. So those were like the real things they are highlighted in there. It's a 14-page sort of general report, but those were the key concerns, and obviously the general political environment. They were concerned about opposition not being allowed. But the processes, I must highlight, they did make quite clear in the report, the processes of running the election did go fairly well. They ranged them anywhere between 70% and 80% in terms of how it actually went down, but the underlying characteristics were quite restrictive.
Now, looking ahead, how will this report affect Tanzania's standing within the African Union? And also, do you think it could pressure Tanzania to reform its electoral process?
So that's a very tricky one, right? Because, you know, it's maintaining your sovereignty. And while the African Union is the supranational body, you know, African countries don't really have to agree with what they say. So I think it will affect, it will have some negative sentiment on President Hassan and the CCM moving forward. So it will hurt them a little bit in the AU and as well as in the EAC region, because you'll have this sort of reputation and it will impact the reputational risk. So there will be some elements of it. But I think going forward, it might precipitate some of the changes. So President Hassan has been very clear in her electioneering campaign that she will look into the constitution. And when she initially became the president of Tanzania, she made some changes towards improving the democratic space. So I think this report and the global pressure and some of the bad media per se, or the optics of the unrest that Tanzania is getting, will put some pressure on President Hassan to make some changes or at least start talking about them.
Meanwhile, Egypt's Khaled El Nani is elected as UNESCO's chief.
Egyptian Minister of Tourism and Antiquities Khaled El Nani has been appointed as UNESCO Director General. A confirmation vote was held today at a general conference. Last month, El Nani won a poll by UNESCO's 58-member executive board. His appointment, however, comes amid criticism over failure to protect cultural treasures at home, such as Cairo's City of the Dead, where some mausoleums were destroyed in the wake of infrastructure projects. Here's Yasa Hakim with more on the man who will be UNESCO's first Arab Director General.
Mr. Khaled Ahmed El Anani El Iz, 55.
It was a landslide victory for the Egyptian, the widest margin recorded in the history of UNESCO. Khaled El Anani got 55 votes out of the 57 available, with only one abstention recorded. He faced another African nominee, Congolese diplomat and UNESCO veteran Firmin Matoko, in the elections. The professor of Egyptology at Cairo's Helwani University will take over from outgoing Director General Audrey Azoulay. El Anani becomes the first Egyptian and Arab, and just the second African, to head the UN organization.
I pledge from here that I will work with every member state, with everyone, without having any geographical or cultural agenda. I'll work for a UNESCO for the people, without any exclusion, any discrimination.
Born in 1971, El Anani studied Egyptology in Egypt and earned a PhD in France. His career spanned from being a tour guide to an academic, then an international lecturer, before becoming Egypt's tourism and antiquities minister. His neighbor and former professor, Ali Abdullah, has praised El Anani's intellect.
We are very proud of him. Khaled El Anani is a very calm person who rarely gets tense. He thinks thoroughly before speaking and is very immaculate at work. The initiatives he launched as tourism minister have made him a popular government official. He is also a popular person amongst his colleagues and students.
Khaled El Anani's time as tourism and antiquities minister is seen by many as a success story. He launched several high-profile projects, including the National Museum for Egyptian Civilization. and the renowned Mummy's Parade in downtown Cairo, El Alani also oversaw the construction of the Grand Egyptian Museum, set to open in November. But it's that period between 2020 and 2022 when he steered the ministry through one of its most challenging times, putting in place measures and initiatives to protect Egypt's tourism industry from the damaging impact of the COVID pandemic.
During the COVID pandemic, he was always encouraging new archaeological discoveries. I accompanied him in all these discoveries. He was adamant on promoting Egypt abroad and always invited foreign celebrities and diplomats to Egypt. As an archaeological scientist, he excelled in his work and in creating a qualified team to adopt his plans and vision.
The newly picked UNESCO chief has visited 65 countries in over 2 years of campaigning, and having backed the support of the executive board, now looks forward to steering the new UN body to greater heights.
El Anani is currently celebrating this prestigious post. However, at UNESCO, he will be facing a lot of challenges ahead.
UNESCO, whose mission includes naming and protecting historical antiquities and cultural heritages, is facing an acute financial crisis due to lack of funding from the U.S., its largest backer. The Trump administration will formally withdraw the U.S. membership from UNESCO at the end of 2026, cutting its funding too.
I think this is one of the major challenges that we'll be facing, Dr. Anna. One of the things that all these international organizations are looking for is engaging all parties of the that are interested in their activities. It's not only governments, it's organizations, it's private sector, and so on.
Despite the many challenges that El Anani will face, those who know him believe he will make an impact.
So it's very important that at this moment, Africa is presented so strongly and the Arab world is presented through Dr. Saleh El Anani. He is a perfect choice for the position, and I think he will be able to deliver to the whole world on the cultural and science.
Meanwhile, Mali tightens control on its mining sector.
Mali, Africa's third largest gold producer, a sweeping government decree has stunned the mining industry. Over 90 exploration permits have been revoked. Among them, licenses held by Harmony Gold, IAM Gold, Kora Gold, Birimian Gold, and Resolute Mining. Authorities insist the move is purely administrative. They say companies were asked to update their documentation on the new mining regulations introduced early this year, but many failed to do so.
L'article 204.
Yes, it is Article 204 of the 2023 Mining Code that authorizes such suspension, but it also provides for the reallocation of permits. Certain conditions must be met. For example, if a company carries out no exploration activity for 6 months, its authorization may be withdrawn. The criteria are clearly stated in the law. Many contracts were granted in the past, but the 2023 Code sets out stricter new conditions. The goal is to clean up the sector, reduce opacity, and increase transparency in the allocation process.
But the decree provides little detail, no explanation on whether the firms can appeal or reapply, and no mention of the total area affected or the value of the exploration's activities. Kora Gold told Reuters it had already relinquished the affected permits more than 2 years ago and said the delayed cancellation had no impact on its operations. The other companies, Harmony Gold, IAM Gold, Birimian, and Resolute, did not immediately respond to requests for comments. The move comes as Mali tightens regulations across its mining sector, part of a regional trend toward greater state oversight.
Whether you are national or international partners, the main point is that any company wishing to operate in Mali must comply with Malian regulations. This decision has no negative impact. Foreign companies are not prohibited from mining in Mali. The only requirement is that they respect the laws and regulations in force.
Mali's mining sector is a lifeline for its economy, generating nearly 80% of export earnings. But growing insecurity, political uncertainty, and shifting regulations have already slowed new foreign investments. Analysts say while the latest move may strengthen Mali's sovereignty, it could also send a chill through the investment climate.
You know, mining companies come here to obtain permits, and as soon as their tax exemption period ends, they move to the neighboring country. I worked at the Sima gold mine. After 2 5-year exemptions, they left the site, claiming there was no more gold. Because once the exemptions end, profitability decreases. As soon as they are asked to pay taxes, they leave. By then, they have already made enough profit. But this shows that we must strengthen traceability, transparency, and formalization of the entire export chain so that the trade benefits everyone and does not serve to fuel criminal terrorist networks.
Across West Africa, similar reforms are reshaping the mining landscape. In Guinea, dozens of dormant permits have been withdrawn. In Niger, new mining codes are giving the state a large stake in operations. Mali now joins that wave, seeking more accountability, but risking investor caution in the process. For now, uncertainty remains over what comes next, both for the companies affected and for Mali's image as a mining destination. But one thing is certain. As Mali redefines its mining landscape marks yet another chapter in Africa's growing push to rewrite the rules of resource ownership. Mamadou Tsapili, CGTN, Bamako.
Elon Musk's deal approved by Tesla shareholders.
Is on course to become the world's first trillionaire. Tesla shareholders have approved a record-breaking pay deal for its boss. After the announcement, Mr. Musk, who's already the world's richest man, took to the stage and danced a chant of his name. To receive the unprecedented payout, he must drastically raise Tesla's market value over 10 years. If he does this and meets various targets, he'll be rewarded with hundreds of millions of new shares. The scale of the package has drawn criticism, but Tesla's board argued that Mr. Musk might leave if it weren't approved. Our North America business correspondent Michelle Fleury reports.
Elon Musk is already unfathomably rich and, well, he just got a lot wealthier, potentially. Amidst raucous cheers and dancing robots at their annual meeting, Tesla shareholders officially approved Mr. Musk's pay package.
And CEO Elon Musk, with over 75% voting in favor, approved.
Although he won't receive a salary, the deal does unlock Tesla's stock worth about $1 trillion if the company meets certain criteria within the next decade, which includes getting 1 million driverless robo-taxis into commercial operation. Along with his heartfelt thanks, Mr. Musk also gave shareholders his vision of how the biggest electric car company in America will make all of them wealthier by also becoming the biggest producer of humanoid robots in the world.
I think it's going to be the biggest product of all time by far. Yeah. So, like bigger than cell phones, bigger than anything.
If Mr. Musk is to realize the full value of the pay package, his company and large sections of the economy are going to be drastically changed. Tesla shareholders, meanwhile, have placed a large bet on Mr. Musk and a robot-filled vision of the future. And if you were wondering how much that is, well, think of it like this. $1 trillion is like a mountain of $100 bills, so tall that it would reach a third of the way to the moon.
That's quite a statistic, isn't it, Michelle Fleury? Let's speak to financial commentator Susanna Streeter. I mean, how inevitable was this that the board agreed?
Well, given the huge marketing push that Tesla and the board had led to try and get lots of shareholders on side, it wasn't surprising. There was opposition. Norway's sovereign wealth fund, for one, not happy with this direction Tesla has taken. But there are armies of retail investors invested in Tesla stock, and they certainly have drunk the Kool-Aid in terms of the hype, believing the hype that Tesla has put forward. I mean, that's not to say that it doesn't have lots of irons in the fire in terms of robotics. It is, you know, one of the forefront companies in this revolution. But the problem is there is a lot of competition. And so it's certainly not going to be plain sailing ahead.
Where is that main competition coming from and in what sectors?
Well, for example, Tesla is positioning itself as an AI and robotics company. That's where the valuation is coming from. It's not from electric vehicles anymore. So in the self-drive technology, you've got Waymo, for example, Alphabet's Waymo, already rolling out self-drive cars in cities around the world. And Tesla is still mainly at more of a testing stage. And then you've got the Optimus robot, this humanoid robot that Tesla really does believe is the future. And Elon Musk says is the future. We'll all want one. Well, there are other robots being developed. The Agibosh in China, for example, is leaps ahead, developed by Huawei engineers. So again, there is a lot of competition. There's energy storage as well, but there's competition there. So whichever way you look at it, it is not going to be easy for Elon Musk to achieve this $1 trillion payout.
Yeah, because the aim is an $8 trillion valuation. I can't even work out how many zeros is in that number. It seems unreachable, but they're confident.
Well, they are confident, but there is a lot of hype around it. NVIDIA, the huge chip maker, has just achieved a $5 trillion valuation, an eye-watering sum. Tesla wants to go way further than that. Yet at the same time, we've got all of these warnings coming from industry heavyweights, senior banking leaders in the United States, that there could be this AI bubble brewing and a correction. So at the same time, so all of these warnings are coming through, that valuations are overblown. You've got Tesla, you know, really aiming sky high. So I think at the moment, you know, this $1 trillion payout for Musk is simply a headline, given the huge barriers they have to overcome.
Susanna, good to talk to you as always. Thank you very much, Susanna Streeter.
And with that, we've come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Reader News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program.